The media are drawn to characters with multiple personalities. It's not hard to see why. The afflicted, though often in pain, are able to live out a fantasy that many healthy people have, to be someone else for a while, to live another life. Dissociative identity disorder, as it's now known, is very rare in real life, but it's left an indelible mark on pop culture, from the classic film Three Faces of Eve to Showtime's recent United States of Tara, the story of a mom with multiple, often flamboyant, personalities.
I will be in control. Me, Tara.
This is all your fault, with the drugs and the black.
Me, Stepford. Buck had the big night out. I wasn't even...
Hey, I was doing important stuff. Just happened to be at a casino.
I, for one, think it's about time you asserted yourself.
Our fascination with split personalities goes way back. Think Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. But in modern times, it's been supercharged by Sybil, a 1973 bestseller about the treatment of Sybil Dorset, a pseudonym for Shirley Mason, by her psychoanalyst Cornelia B. Wilbur. The book was made into a miniseries of the same name in 1976 and again as a TV movie in 2007. The book and the movies met every expectation we'd come to have about those afflicted with the disorder. Sybil was young and fragile, fraught with warring personalities, saved by the ministrations of a kind and brilliant doctor. But as journalist Debbie Nathan found, not only is Sybil's story not what it seems, it gave rise to a kind of epidemic.
There had been a few dozen cases over decades and decades and decades, almost 200 years. And then by the early 90s, there were 40,000 that had been diagnosed, and there were countless other people who were just self-diagnosing. In the 80s, every investigative news show would have therapists on with their patients, and it would become like a dog and pony show. The therapist would say, "Can I talk to Amy?" The woman's eyes would flicker, and all of a sudden there'd be, "Hi, you know, it was the child." Then there'd be an old man, and then there'd be an evil, devilish type person, and they'd do a whole show.
So when did the press become fascinated with this whole syndrome?
The press has been fascinated with the syndrome for over 100 years. In the late 19th century, for example, there was a woman down in Brooklyn. She was called the Brooklyn Enigma. She lay in bed and supposedly had a dual personality. She could go for months and years without eating a smidgen of food. There was another case in 1905. That case was made into a play called The Case of Becky. That was made into one of the first silent movies. Every single case after that, where there was a woman who was sort of an attractive, interesting woman, like the Three Faces of Eve, turns into a movie. Sybil, 40 million people saw it, one-fifth of the population. There's a core in our culture that's fascinated with the idea of the opposition between good and evil. The older multiple personality cases were almost always about a split between two, the good and the bad girl. It's only recently that the personalities have proliferated. 1,600, 4,000. But
somebody has actually 4,000?
4,500, I've heard of. So you have experts wanting to find it. You have the media becoming obsessed. I think there was something about the idea of splitting that was really compelling for young women during that time, the early 70s. All these new roles were opening up for us, all these new jobs, all these new, even sexual roles. I found so many letters in the archive that I used to do this book from young women during that time writing about those conflicts, writing to the author of Sybil. I think that's really what it was about.
Can you give a summary of how the Sybil story came to be in the form it's come down to us?
Sybil's real name was Shirley Mason. She was born in the early 20s in rural Minnesota. And she was a very imaginative child, very fantasy prone. And she was a very conscientiously religious girl and felt a lot of guilt about these artistic impulses she had. She met her psychiatrist in 1945, and the psychiatrist became very smitten with her and started actually giving her literature to read about multiple personality disorder. Sybil was a very emotionally needy young woman, really wanted attention from the therapist, and walked in, knocked on the door one day of the office, and said, "Hi, I'm Peggy.
My name's Peggy. I'm only nine. Will you believe me?
Yes, I believe you.
It wasn't very dramatic, but the therapist was absolutely entranced, and that was the beginning of their multiple personality relationship. Sometimes she knew that she was putting it on. Other times she didn't.
At one point, she wrote a letter recanting, and then she recanted her recanting.
What she says is, look, I'm really embarrassed to tell you this. I don't have multiple personalities. I don't even have two personalities. I don't really know why I did this or how I was able to. I just know that it was easy to do and that things are getting worse for me, not better. And I really want to do more therapy with you, but I want to do it honestly. And then the therapist by then had given talks. She was writing papers.
She was invested in this diagnosis.
She was invested. She told herself that the patient was still sick but didn't want more therapy, even though the letter said, please give me more therapy. I think the psychiatrist sort of implied to the patient, look, if you don't get with the program, that's it. The patient said, okay. You know, she wrote her a letter a few weeks later and said, some other person wrote that letter.
In the arc that was established by Sybil, the mother was the mother from hell. And for me, it seems to recall the early diagnoses of autism, which always laid blame on the quote-unquote refrigerator mom, now an entirely discredited idea.
I think that that's actually where it came from. The therapist came out of that tradition where everything was blamed on mothers.
Christmas tree, yellow Christmas tree.
Do you think it's just sunshine and singing and pretty colors when you grow up? Well, I should say not. You are bad. You are spoiled rotten. And you better learn quick.
Why? Why?
Schizophrenia, homosexuality. And I think she extended that theory into her ideas about Sybil's mother. The diagnosis, when it was really in its heyday, made a lot of people very, very sick. And the main problem with the diagnosis is that if you get it, it's assumed that you got it because you were severely, horridly abused and usually sexually. Well, imagine if you're a middle-aged woman, you've spent your entire life having nice thoughts about your parents, and suddenly you are having memories that are like utter nightmares, and you feel that you're in a nightmare.
Like the satanic cult scare of roughly the same period.
Well, as a matter of fact, the satanic cult scare came from multiple personality therapy. The first people to tell the stories of satanic sexual abuse were patients in therapy for multiple personality disorder.
What happened to Shirley Mason?
After her therapy, she got a job as an art professor at a small college, and this was before the book came out. She was doing very well. She got away from the therapist, got tenure at a little college, had her house, was popular at her job, and then the book came out. Her colleagues in art education recognized her, the townspeople where she grew up. The book had not really changed the details. For example, it said that her maid was named Bessie Flood, and the real maid's name was Desi Blood. There were many things like that. And she had a bunch of friends who knew that she'd been in therapy with the psychoanalyst in New York, and the psychoanalyst ended up having her name in the book. I mean, if she'd just been anonymous, I don't think that Sybil would have been found out. And she left. She left almost in the dead of night. And she went to Lexington, Kentucky, where the therapist was, and she never lived apart from her after that.
Debbie, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Debbie Nathan is a journalist and author of Sybil Exposed, the extraordinary story behind the famous multiple personality case.
She gave me a split personality. She tore me up inside. She caused me to live two different lives, like a dog and Jekyll.
That's it for this week's show. On the Media was produced by Jamie York, Alex Goldman, PJ Vogt, Sara Abdurrahman, and Chris Neary, with more help from Doug Anderson and Gianna Palmer, and edited by Brooke. Our technical director is Jennifer Munson. Our engineer this week was Dylan Keefe.
Katya Rogers is our senior producer. Ellen Horn is WNYC's senior director of national programs. Bassist composer Ben Allison wrote our theme. You can listen to the program and find transcripts at onthemedia.org, where you can also check out our blog filled with even more OTM stuff. You can find us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter, and you can email us at onthemedia@wnyc.org. On the Media is produced by WNYC and distributed by NPR. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield.
Support for On the Media comes from the Ford Foundation, the Jane Marcher Foundation, the Overbrook Foundation, and the listeners of WNYC Radio. This is NPR.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.